You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
We don't really get enough respect for doing what we do. There's a lot of haters out there that, you know, want to just be like, oh, Toilet of Hell, they don't know anything. They've got a small audience. The reach is limited. I'm telling you they're wrong. Because 2 weeks ago, maybe 1 week ago, we had a long conversation about a little publication called Metal Hammer. And we roasted him, man. We roasted him good. And do you know what happened after that?
I think we roasted them a little too hard because, as of right now, they don't exist.
So I'm just telling you, haters watch your ass. Because once, you know, we get the wheels of motion here, your whole business is going to crumble. That's the power of independent press. That's the power of the Toilet of Hell. That's what I'm saying.
Again, why do I have these powers and use them for evil instead of good?
We need to focus this on more worthy targets. I mean, Metal Hammer, you know, kind of entry-level publication, but I hold no real ill will towards them. Whereas, let's see, just my go-to example, Ted Cruz is still alive and, you know, able to ruin people's lives. It's his birthday today, by the way.
Oh, he doesn't look a shade under 1,000 years old.
It's that amulet he keeps under his jacket. It's meant to protect evil for generations untold. What else has happened in the news this week? This very special Christmas episode.
The very special Christmas episode, Nine Inch Nails has put out a new EP. At least for streaming as of right now.
Have you listened to it?
I listened to one song earlier today when it came out. I liked it. It reminded me a lot of Monster Magnet.
Interesting, because I don't often... Monster Magnet seems to have a very organic sound versus Nine Inch Nails, which is... more synthetic. How does that come into play? I haven't heard this yet, so I want you to...
I think it was... the Nine Inch Nails song was maybe a little bit more psychedelic kind of sounding than what they usually do. It wasn't, like, steady pounding or industrial-type sounds. It was a little darker, I guess, than what they usually do. I don't know. Maybe I'm completely off base. I did post about it on Twitter at 365 Days of Horror, and someone responded, or actually our friend Dental Damnation responded with the crying laughing emoji. So maybe I'm wrong.
You used Twitter for entirely different purposes. While you were talking to me just now, I sent a hateful message to Ted Cruz.
Maybe you'll make him cry.
Yeah, for that kind of trenchant analysis, you can follow me at Joe Thrashenkill on Twitter. So that's interesting. I'm not a huge Nine Inch Nails fan, but I will check that out. Of course, I think I'd prefer that he went back to like the kind of dance pop he was doing with was it Birds of Paradise in the 80s?
Yeah, he's gone through some changes since then. Nine Inch Nails is one of those bands where I like just about everything I've ever heard them do, but for whatever reason, I don't own any albums. Do you have any bands like that?
Many. There are many, many bands I feel that way about. Revocation is one of them.
It's just kind of weird. Like, I don't know where to start. Some people would say, like, Downward Spiral or Pretty Hate Machine. And, like, I don't want to get just, like, a best-of album where the money might go to just some label or I'll miss out on, like, the deep cuts. So I've just kind of been staying away from getting anything at all.
That's fair. Fun fact, I broke my dad's turntable when I was a kid because I found a copy of Pretty Hate Machine on vinyl at a used bookstore. And I'm sure that was actually worth a decent dollar, especially nowadays. And he just ruined his record player by trying to scratch with it.
Wiki wiki.
It was a different time. Nu metal was a thing. Bands had an ancillary turntablist. You know, it's all going to come around again. Everything's cyclical. You'll hear about it in a few months.
What would have your DJ name been if you were in a DJ nu metal band?
DJ Tanner. So in addition to new music, there's drama on the internet.
embarrassing drama.
I mean, there's actually a lot of it, and a lot of people should probably feel ashamed.
There's one drama going on with someone's mama.
Okay, that is fucking awesome. I wish that my mother cared enough about anything that I did to get on Facebook to tell the haters off, as is the case with one Trey Azagoth's mother. Did I pronounce that right? I don't pronounce anything right.
I don't even bother with that one, because I just say as a Google goth.
As a Google, it's the, you know, the blind idiot Lovecraft god. You're not even supposed to be able to say these names anyway. They're supposed to cause madness by speaking them aloud. So,
well, it's working.
Trey A from a little band called Morbid Angel. If folks are unfamiliar, David Vincent, the former vocalist of Morbid Angel, who's done some of their best records with the band, as well as by far their worst record, has decided to start a Morbid Angel cover band with another former drummer of the band. This is a curious move for a number of reasons. Number one, I love Morbid Angel. They are a legendary band, but I don't think that they sell out too many venues, and start having a former vocalist and former drummer start a cover band of it. I can't imagine they would pull anywhere near the same crowd. Like, would you go see David Vincent and one guy from the Morbid Angel behind the drums if he came to a venue?
I wouldn't personally, but I think this is kind of like what's going on with bands like L.A. Guns or like Queensryche, where the members aren't getting along, so they do their own thing and just play the same songs, just hoping to get some of the audience to come out and see them. I don't know if Morbid Angel has enough fan base to go see this new project, which is going to be called I Am Morbid, and to go see the actual band.
You know, David Vincent's vocals are really good and unique. But if I want the Morbid Angel experience, I don't want to go just see the guy that has nipple tape on. I want to see Trey. And I believe that Trey's mother feels the same way. She has called out David Vincent on Facebook. And I will quote here. David, what in the world are you doing? I see you still riding on Trey's coattail. Good luck thinking you'll succeed by using not only Morbid Angel's music. Careful, nothing you do totally belongs to Trey. If so, you need to pay for each song used. And as far as using the logo which Trey owns, and a new logo that isn't just the same but isn't used for, all you did was change the color, get your own band together, and leave Morbid Angel out of it. Is that too much to ask? P.S. Why nothing in English? Not everyone knows Spanish. I don't know what that means.
This was posted on, there was an event for one of their shows in Sao Paulo, Brazil, which is funny because they don't speak Spanish in Brazil. They speak Portuguese. But going back to your quote, I have a question. Why does Trey Azagulgat's mother sound like a gangster from the 50s?
Look, man, we've been over this. I can do two different accents. If you want generic Italian, I got you covered. If you want a 1950s gangster that's also generic Italian, I've got that covered too, man. We really should have just had Brenicide on the show to help us out with this and reading in the voice of Joey from Manowar's mother.
That could be our goal for next year, is just to have Brenicide on as much as possible, just to read things in mother's voices.
Joey! You forgot to take out the trash!
My son knows nothing about this, and he would not waste his time to even post on this page.
So good on Trey's mom. She has a real point here until she got to the whole Spanish thing. That was a little, you know how moms are. But I kind of agree with her.
I hope she was making him like a sandwich while doing this, like his cutting off the crust from his lunch.
Someone in the Facebook group, the Toilet of Hell Facebook group that everyone should join, made a comment about this, that it's kind of funny how suburban death metal can be, in the case of Trey's mother sticking up for him. And I picked up a vinyl copy of Morbid Angel's Domination, which is by far their best record. Don't at me, that's the truth. And I was looking at the liner notes, which are hilarious, in that one, Trey takes the time to thank the dudes who work at his local Babbage's for helping him get, like, imported Japanese RPGs.
Well, that's kind of sweet in a weird way.
It is, and I really like that. You know, normally I'm opposed to weebdom and nerddom and such, but I think that's fantastic. So, good on you, Trey, and good on you, Ma. How about something far more despicable?
My Phil Anselmo sense is tingling.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen, man. And I say this with absolute sincerity. I'm on the record of being a huge Pantera fan, and I've respected Anselmo's work for a long time, and he's just making a bigger and bigger ass of himself with every passing day. By the time this show airs, I think it'll be a much bigger news item of something that is going around Twitter today, but we can get to that a little bit later, because a few days ago he went off on Rob Flynn of Machine Head and Scott Ian of Anthrax, just roughly 7 months after they called him out for doing his dumb white power shtick.
Yeah, it's kind of weird why it took him so long to do this. He did have a couple of apologies not too long after the whole incident, and then kind of went into hiding for a while. And now that his band Superjoint, formerly Superjoint Ritual, is kind of kicking back up with their new album and they're going on tour soon, he's been doing a lot of interviews. And this one he did on December 15th on Eddie Trunk's show and addressed the situation in a really weird way. Like, kind of, here, I'll just read some quotes. "As far as I understood, this was a gig for my murdered guitar player, and from the second I stepped out on the stage till the very end, and you could watch the YouTube footage for yourself, me growing more and more, drunkenly I may, but that's neither here nor there, aggravated by these two or three hecklers. When people start screaming racist over and over and over and over again at me, what I did was show them exactly what the ugliest possible thing I could think of at the time was." So his reasoning has changed 3 or 4 times.
So does he know that there's actual video of the entire show? Because that didn't happen. It didn't happen. And so it went from a joke about white wine to a joke about to him getting frustrated with people calling him racist in the audience. It's ridiculous.
If he had any sense, he just would have apologized and just gone quiet with it and focused on his music. I think nowadays people are pretty forgiving just about anything that you do now. So I think people would have forgotten about this like all of his other transgressions. But it's starting up again because now he's gone after Rob Flynn and Scott Ian. And the weirdness continues. Here's another quote. "I was half angry, half joking, because funny enough, just before the gig started, Doug Pinnick from King's X, a gay black man, came to say hello to me. I kissed him on the lips because I'm comfortable as hell with my sexuality, and I don't care what people think about me sexually. And then he said, 'Man, you taste good,' and it was the white wine."
There's a lot to unpack there, man.
I think that's above our pay grade. So getting past all of the little weird asides during this interview, here's the meat of what he said. "This whole I'm a racist thing is infuriating because it's false, absolutely false. And I'd like to turn around and say, 'Hey, what have you done to better your community, Robert?'" That's Robert Flynn, Rob Flynn. I love that he calls him Robert.
Robert.
"If you're going to call me out on the supposed heinous act, what have you done? What have you done? I know what I've done. I know what I've done for the inner city kids in Detroit when the Kronk Boxing Gym was getting closed down. I forked over thousands of dollars that I most certainly did not have to make sure these kids got fed, clothed, and had a place to sleep because it was run by the last father figure I had in my goddamn life, a black man named Emmanuel Stewart, rest in peace, who used to call me before every fight that he would call on HBO and say, 'What you think, Phil?' And he would ask me for my opinion of what I thought the outcome would be." And then when talking about Scott Ian, he said, The day after it happened, Scott goes, Phil, he wrote me some email. What I saw was ugly and this and that and the other. So says the guy who writes a record called Speak English or Die. And if that record would have come out this year, last year, fucking forget it. You think he'd get pounced on? You're damn right he would, and he knows it. And if you're really sorry, donate to this Nazi Hunter Jewish cause or whatever. I did it in an hour. Did you ever hear about that story? Of course you didn't. You know why? It doesn't make good headlines. I donated that hour, if not that goddamn second. Trying to turn it around on Rob Flynn, which seems weird and random. And then the Scott Ian thing, talking about the old Stormtroopers of Death album from 1985.
Yeah, which was, supposed to be kind of a joke. Of course, you know, years later, Billy Milano would carry on the cause of not being a joke, but Billy Milano is not Scott Ian.
No, he's also out of his mind.
Yes. It's just the high cholesterol. It makes him crazy.
Too many mozzarella sticks will do that to you.
Billy! The mozzarella sticks are upstairs!
You want bagel bites, Billy? What a way to end the year.
If this year has been the complete unraveling of Phil Anselmo. Get better in the new year, Phil. Do better. Do better. That's what I meant. Do better in the new year. So it's Christmas. Well, this episode is premiering the day after Christmas, and we're gonna do a little gift exchange here. Can you hear that?
Oh, I can hear that.
It's dinner time in the Thrash and Kill household.
There always has to be a cat interrupting the show at least once.
Yeah, that's true. So do you want to go ahead and open up one of your packages?
Yes, I received three packages. Randall Thor said he sent me something, and I do believe him, but I don't think I got it yet. Hopefully it wasn't delivered and someone stole it, so fingers crossed. A couple weeks ago, I received a tube from redbubble.com. I don't drunk order things or late night order things online, so someone definitely sent me this. Let me open this up.
All right. Redbubble, your source of custom printed merch.
It is a poster.
Okay.
Let's see if I could open this up. Real time opening packages only here on Toilet of Hell Radio.
It sounds crunchy.
It's a little crunchy. It's a little baggy. Had to open it up with my trusty stab and knife. See? Opening it up.
The unfurling.
Oh, this is awesome. It is a poster of Bub from Day of the Dead, which is the zombie icon for me on the website.
That's fantastic.
Oh, this is so cool.
Also, your Twitter AVI.
Yes, so people can recognize me. Oh, very cool. Whoever sent me this, please send me a message on Twitter or through the website, because this is excellent.
Fantastic.
So you can open up the next package.
Alrighty. I have a package from you here. I didn't say that into the microphone. Let me try again. I have a package from you here.
Yeah, you do.
This is a large box. In that I could probably fit two cats in here.
I'm sending you a subtle message.
It's already marked, addressed to Abu Dhabi. A little Garfield humor for you.
Very nice.
I'm opening this large U-Haul box. It is very lovingly covered in duct tape.
Yeah, the tape I had just wasn't sticking, and so I'm just like, ah, oh, fuck this shit. Duct tape.
Let's see here. Oh, you packed this well, man. I'm opening it.
But I didn't want any of this. I didn't want any of the smell escaping from the horse head.
Oh God, what is it? No! All right. So I've opened the box and I see a brown paper Whole Foods bag. Oh, there's shit everywhere, man. All right. In the brown paper Whole Foods bag, I have a Metal Suck sticker.
You're welcome.
I have a blank CD labeled Ignorant Hardcore, which I am going to put in my car post-haste.
You better believe there's Madball on there.
I hope so, man. 100 Demons?
There might be some 100 Demons. There's Agnostic Front is on there. Sub-Zero, Sworn Enemy, a couple other good ones.
I have a Tovarish album, which is a band that I've heard good things from, and that I've heard the people in the band are pretty cool.
All lies. With that album, if you put in a CD player and hit rewind as soon as it starts, it brings you to the pre-roll, and you'll get to hear another song.
Interesting. A hidden track.
Yep.
Very cool. Wait, Nefarious Industries. The logo here is awesome. This is a prawn with a sombrero and a big Fu Manchu mustache.
It's pretty good.
I like that a lot. I'm looking forward to... you've got on the track listing here is Laika, which would be the Soviet first dog in space.
Yeah, it's a really tragic story. Don't ever read it if you're a dog lover.
Oh, I was just like, yeah, space puppy.
I'll not look at this. It's kind of sad.
I have also in this package cat butt magnets. They are butts. It is what it says on the fucking label, man. It's magnets that are half cats, the back half, so that I can hold up my important documents on my fridge. With more cat butts. I don't have nearly enough of these in my life, so thank you.
Your life is just full of cat butts right now.
They're everywhere, man. Ugh.
In your dinner, next to your face when you wake up in the morning.
Oh, man, there is so much stuff in this package.
I like to give gifts.
Yeah. There is also a plastic bag in here from... let's see, Petco. Okay, that answers my next question, because I see in front of me a bag of dingo munchie sticks that promises chicken in the middle, and I wasn't sure if this was a Joe treat or a Franklin the dog treat. And
I heard you like chicken, so.
But the Petco bag gives me an important context clue, so I don't nab into these like taquitos that they look like.
You might get a little bit peckish at work and just keep them in your desk.
I'm a little curious. It says that, I mean, it's 100% inspected. It's not China source ingredients.
I won't judge you.
Oh, it says very clearly on here, four dogs.
Bummer.
Damn the man. Oh my god, there is more stuff in here. Holy cow. There is a vinyl record here from Scale the Summit with five.
It's a test pressing.
That is amazing. Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Feel free to sell it on eBay, whatever.
I think I'll do the listening thing to it instead.
Good.
This is an incredible haul. Thank you so much, 365 Days of Horror.
You're welcome. You work so hard for us. You deserve nice things.
And you've included a very lovely card for me and the household of animals here. Thank you so much for this. This is really great. So you have more in front of you to open, right?
I do. I have two packages here. One an envelope, one a box from Amazon. I'm going to open the envelope first.
These both could be for me, but I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, the envelope is from Amazon Fulfillment Services.
Probably.
Which is a nice way of saying a giant warehouse in the middle of nowhere. Opening it up. And it is Rock and Roll Nightmare on DVD.
It fucking kills me, man. They didn't have that on Blu-ray. I searched around and could not find Rock and Roll Nightmare on Blu-ray.
It works out. I don't have a Blu-ray player, so this is great.
I know that you couldn't get enough of John Michael Thor. So now, whenever you want, you can revisit.
Whenever I want, I could look at his man boobs.
They are firm in such a way that is not quite masculine.
It makes me uncomfortable. And it's a special edition. Oh, hold on. Let me read the special features on this. Oh, excuse me. Rockin' special features. New widescreen, blah, blah, blah. Audio commentary from the director and John... I think he pronounces it Michael, but I'll go with John Michael Thor. new sound, Dolby sound, original Dolby sound. Revelations of a Rock and Roll Warrior, The Life and History of John Michael Thor featurette. Creating a Child Wolf, Behind the Scenes Makeup featurette. And if you've ever seen this movie, the makeup is terrible.
Never listened to an audio commentary track on a DVD in my life, but I think I would like to hear what the director and Mr. Thor think about this artwork.
Yeah, let's see. Rock and Shock Memories, rare footage from the set of Rock and Roll Nightmare. Music videos for Energy and We Live to Rock. Liner notes, new video introduction and afterword by John Michael Thor. Excellent. Very psyched to watch this. And torture my girlfriend.
If she has somehow avoided seeing this film, that won't last long.
We've watched the other movie he did. I think it's called Zombie Nightmare. And the only reason we've seen it is because... Mystery Science Theater 3000 riffed on it.
Fantastic.
So you want to open your next package?
Yes. No, go ahead and open the other one. That's for me as well.
Okay. Yeah. This is a box with Amazon Prime tape. It says Dispatches from Texas, USA. And it feels like there's absolutely nothing in this box. It's extremely light, so I'm a little concerned.
Yeah.
You didn't send me pure Austin, Texas air, did you?
Nothing fresher. Also, you couldn't possibly get more parts pollen per million.
Gluten-free, artisanal Austin air. Right. Opening this up with my stabbing knife. Wow, they sent a big box.
Seriously?
For something so small. But, excellent. It's a Simpsons minifigure.
Yes. So Very cool. It's supposed to be a mystery. And I'm going to ask, you know, you don't have to because it might hurt the resale value. I would like you to open the package and see which mystery figure you got. Oh,
man. Well, on the cover, or on the packaging, they have Ralph, they have Itchy, Marge, Apu, Krusty, Flanders, Bart, Homer, and Mr. Burns. Mr. Burns is one of my favorite characters.
So I've heard that the Mr. Burns is one of the rarer ones to get in the pack.
All right. Whoever I get, I won't be upset because I love The Simpsons, but that's one of my preferred. I'd also like Mo or Apu would be pretty good. Let's see. Opening it up now.
Just open Mr. Burns.
Oh, jeez. It just exploded everywhere.
Mr. Burns, no whammy, Mr. Burns.
So the packaging exploded, and the thing that landed closest to me was the dead staring eyes of Ned Flanders.
Howdy-doodly, neighbor.
Thank you very much. Oh, a toolkit that says property of Ned Flanders on it that Homer steals.
I'm doing a bit of a time warp here. It is now Christmas Eve, and I just got a package this evening in my mailbox. That is from the return address of Bro Science, which I did not order, my lady did not order from. I believe this is a gift from our good friend, our regular commenter, NBM02SS. So I'm going to go ahead and crack what's open, and we'll see what we got here. I believe Bro Science is the YouTube channel of a character named Dom Mazzetti, who teaches you everything that you need to know about working out. Let's see. Oh my god, this is amazing. This is a shirt of a swole Bevo, and it says Flexus Stronghorns. This is the most perfect gift in the world. Thank you so much, NBM02SS. The first thing I'm going to do is cut the sleeves off this and just show my guns everywhere I go. Church, bar mitzvahs, the whole deal, funerals. thank you so much. I will be posting pictures of this shirt.
Yeah.
Long-time listeners of the show know that we occasionally do a film viewing series, in that we both do our best impersonations of Siskel and Ebert and Armin White, respectively, to lend our critical eye to the greatest films to grace the Netflix instant streaming application. So we decided a couple episodes that on this episode we would talk about Knights of Badassdom, which is a film that was released, I don't know, like a year ago, 2 years ago?
2013.
I was close. 3 years ago. We're gonna, I assume everybody listening right now has done their homework, and they've watched the film, and they're ready to unpack this serious treatise on human imagination.
Ta-da. Right? Yes.
Okay, so how would you like to start this? Because I have opinions.
Uh-oh. Well, give us your opinions, I think.
Okay,
that's
so
the way to start it.
Here is a TLDR. I watched this movie back to back. I finished the film and then I immediately restarted it. Not because it was that good. It's because my eyes just kind of glazed over like 20 minutes in, and I just stopped paying any attention. So I realized I needed to go back and try again. And then it was, I got a little bit further before just completely zoning out. That's partly me being sleepy and cranky, and partly that I felt this movie was pretty lazy in a lot of aspects with the writing. You were the fellow that suggested this film, so I want you to lend your feedback here. What does the movie do for you?
So the movie, as background for the few people who didn't listen to us, is kind of like an action, comedy, fantasy movie. Basically about a man who's kind of a loser, really into metal. His girlfriend breaks up with him. His friends are LARPers, and they trick him into going to this big live-action role-playing thing with them, big live event. And one of them, a character played by Steve Zahn, reads from a book, just some silly spell. It turns out the book is, quote, real, and summons a succubus from hell who goes around killing all of these characters. That's the basis of this movie. While it's not superb writing, and there were editing problems that made the director kind of want to take his name off the movie, I thought it was fun. It is what it is. I don't think you're going to get some sort of incredible movie, but it's a silly hour and a half, a couple of laughs in it. I think Peter Dinklage is in it, and I think he's pretty great as his character, Hung. Just over the top, drugged out, goofy. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, I think I lost interest in the film when Dinklage exited the movie. Because he does about roughly 30 minutes in, I would say.
Somewhere around. I thought it was closer to halfway. But, I mean, it also has Steve Zahn, and you like Steve Zahn.
I do like Steve Zahn. I felt like this was a fairly weak outing for Steve Zahn, though. He didn't have a whole lot to do. You know, he's given this great character of a millionaire wizard nerd, and he just doesn't do a whole lot with it, in my opinion, of course.
A lot of yelling.
There's a lot of yelling. So let's go ahead and take this frame by frame. The film opens with an animation sequence telling us what the deus ex machina of the film is. It's a tome of spells that someone in the 16th century created to summon angels. He fucked it all up. It summons demons instead. Somehow, it is acquired by Steve Zahn, a millionaire nerd who enjoys LARPing. And he recites a passage from the spellbook while doing a live-action role-playing module trying to level up his character and his party's character. He fails to level up, and he also accidentally summons a demon, unbeknownst to him. We then fade to a auto shop, a garage, where a young man is singing along to a god-awful, vaguely metal song while Brian Posehn does his stock metalhead character in the background. And if you'll permit me a moment to say a couple of words about Brian Posehn, seeing him in this movie kind of let me all know all I needed to know. Do you have an opinion on Brian Posehn?
I got no problem with him.
So I saw Slayer once, and Posehn introduced the band. He did a couple minutes of stand-up about Slayer and Metallica and Pantera, because Brian Posehn is a caricature of a person that is interested in metal. It's very much the Jose Mangan effect, in that he knows three bands, and that's all that matters. I get that if you're trying to appeal to a wider audience, it doesn't work if you're making jokes about, like, Bolza or anything like that, but try harder. At this moment, as this young man, his name is Joe, no relation, is singing along to this track, his boss comes up and tells him he's disappointed in him, his girlfriend that works at the shop breaks up with him, and he starts going into an explanation of genres of metal, which would be funny, except that it's just not if you know anything about any genre of metal. And we're kind of, that's how we start out. It's a movie ostensibly about nerd shit, and it fucks up the nerd shit.
I think the movie isn't geared specifically for metal fans. I think it's obviously trying to appeal to a wider audience, and while the metal fans like us would love to hear an actual breakdown of specific subgenres, I think it's just nice to hear sludge metal mentioned in any sort of movie that's, you know, regular people will see.
If you don't mind, you know, improper categorization, which we all know is the bane of nerddom.
Yes, well, our partner Randall Thor would have lots of things to say about just this scene alone.
I feel like he's rubbing off on me, and that's not good. I don't like that.
It's spreading.
I liked Peter Dinklage. I thought his character of a, you know, he's a small person who's super into LARPing and taking drugs, and I think that's a cool thing. He had a very good vibe about him in the movie. Unfortunately, he was disemboweled a few minutes into it. I was surprised by a lot of the actors in this film, because it seemed like super low budget, yet they still got Steve Zahn, Peter Dinklage, Danny Abed, a McPoyle, which is awesome. I do.
Were you happy with that?
I was happy with the McPoyle. I feel like there were some other characters as well that showed up that it was above its pay grade.
Yeah, I think all the money went to that instead of other things. I mean, the movie was mostly shot in the woods.
That is true, and not like nice woods. It was a crappy local campground to wherever they were, which is part of the joke of the film. The brunt of the movie takes place in the LARPing grounds, which is supposed to be a crappy neighborhood park. McPoyle is the... What is his fucking character's name?
Oh, he had a stupid name. Hold on, let me see if I can find it on IMDb.
Our boy McPoyle is the dungeon master for this huge LARPing event with all of these different questing parties. I don't quite know how all of this works, because it seemed like it was combining D&D modules in a way that I'm not sure actually works with live-action role-playing. And I've now given this more thought than anyone ever should.
So the movie isn't like this big, expansive, complex world. I think a lot of it is basic characters that people can easily identify with. This guy's the nerd, this guy's the strong guy, something like that. And I think if you go in just seeing it as kind of a silly LARF, I think that people might find it more enjoyable. I did like watching it throughout and picking out the little metal jokes that were sprinkled throughout, like a character LARPing named King Diamond and a character named King Kerry. And the Battle of Evermore is a Led Zeppelin song.
I did notice the King Diamond thing, but I think I was too just out of it to know what the hell they were talking about.
Yeah, you know, Maybe that's a little bit of the movie. Maybe that's a little bit of you.
It could be a lot on me, man. As you say, I suppose it's good for a LARF. You having a LARF, mate? But a lot of these jokes felt just so recycled over and over and over again from any other comedy movie that you've seen in your life.
Yeah, I suppose. It did lose steam towards the end. I will admit that.
Yeah. TLDR, summon a demon. Demon kills a lot of people. They conquer the demon through a combination of teamwork and magic.
And metal.
And metal. That's right. There was some metal there, too. And it ends with the guy that was heartbroken at the beginning of the movie getting with the super hot chick, them abandoning LARPing to start a metal band. Metal-ish band. What did I miss here?
I think you pretty much nailed it. Sorry you didn't like it.
No, it's not that I disliked it. It's that for some reason, there's these little perplexing segments of this movie, and it kneeled at me in a way that I can't fully articulate why. And I feel like this is a symptom of becoming a fucking nerd, and I don't like it.
So unclean.
Overall, I'm gonna say it's worthwhile checking it out on Netflix, because I mean, if you've got it, if you got Netflix, or you know, more accurately, you're still stealing your Netflix account from a roommate that you had 6 years ago, as I am, it's free, man. Fucking go for it. Like you don't really have anything better going on anyway, and you can watch it, and then you can, you know, let me know that I'm wrong about my opinion about it.
So it gets a fucking go for it out of 10.
Yeah, fucking A, whatever, man. You watch what you want.
Well, I think since the New Year's is coming up, we should make our predictions for 2017, what we think is going to happen in the metal world and the world at large.
Interesting. I like that idea. So, predictions for the new year in the world of metal. Ooh, I predict that Phil Anselmo, finding himself at the end of his rope, his hole that he's dug for himself cannot possibly get any deeper, follows the path of many a scoundrel before him, and finds Jesus.
What does he find him doing?
Well, I mean, like, he's gonna find Jesus, like, you know, hanging out on the cross as he does, you know, per usual, and embracing Christianity in a way that he can fully monetize, like all the great ones do. So, you know, it won't be long till you're seeing, like, competition with Jerry Falwell. You've got Phil Anselmo Ministries coming soon to a mega church near you.
Hashtag blessed.
Too blessed to be stressed. Thanks, Jesus. What do you got?
Geez, I really got to think about this. Another super group will form featuring a couple members of bands that people kind of like. They will put out an album, they will go on one tour, and then we'll never hear about them again.
I'm going to take that a step further and say that it's going to feature a member of Slipknot, but not like one of the good ones.
Keg can hitter number two?
Yes, exactly. What's the DJ up to? I'm going to get that guy to be in my band.
He could teach you how to wiki-wiki. It all comes full circle.
Perfect.